It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Alex Lindsay's here. Andy Iannocco filling in for Jason Snell from AppleInsider.com. It's Stephen Robles. We got lots to talk about. Big announcement from Apple. They're finally bringing two of their premier products to the iPad. We'll talk about Apple's quarterly results last week. Some big court results in Europe. And why I'm not going to buy another Chevy. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWIT.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 869, recorded Tuesday, May 9th, 2023. Daddy Care Plus. This episode of Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Whether you're starting a new business or growing one, if you want to be successful, you need the most talented people at your team. That's where ZipRecruiter comes in. Right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. And by ZocDoc. When you're not feeling your best, just trying to hold it together, finding great care shouldn't take up all your energy. Go to ZocDoc.com/MacBreak and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. Many available within 24 hours. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. And thank you, Apple. That's all I have to say. There's news. Came out at 6 in the morning, our time, but there's news. That's the chortle, the friendly chortle of your good buddy Andy Iannocco of WGBH Boston. Hi, Andrew.
Hello. Yeah, it's always fun. Like, one of the first things I do in the morning is, like, read my daily comic strips on Go Comics. And then I also just, like, see, is there anything really awesome in my YouTube feed that I don't want to start the day before I watch? And so it's always nice before, oh, I'm going to have to take a look at that before later. So when the videos start posting, I'm like, okay, good thing I didn't decide to go for a walk or anything.
Yeah. Life is strange that way. All of a sudden, Apple's on the East Coast. I don't know. It's who's working in PR at 6 a.m.? I don't know. Somebody pushed the button.
It's all about Madison Avenue, baby.
Yeah. You know, it probably is, right? It's all about stock. Alex Lindsay, I'm sure when the news came in, was busy, because he's going to be one of the people who's going to be using Final Cut on an iPad. I betcha. Hi, Alex.
Yeah, we were in office hours. We were in office hours and someone asked the question. I was like, they're what? They're what? Mm-hmm. I didn't get to see it because usually we're in pre-show and weren't really paying attention to that by then. I was happily surprised. Looks good.
I make a habit of going to the Apple newsroom right before the show, just in case. Usually disappointing. Exactly. Not this time. And as we knew, Jason Snell has taken the week off. Visit mom. It's Mother's Day weekend coming up. He's a good son. So instead of the six color charts today, we're going to have the Apple Insider charts today with Stephen Robles. Hello, Stephen.
Good. It's great to be here. I even have a Final Cut right here on my iPhone already.
Look, no, you that. Don't. You stop that. You can't. Not allowed. Not allowed. It's coming out May. So the news, which we haven't said yet. Apple is bringing Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro to the iPad. You will have to buy it anew. In fact, it's a subscription, which means $5 a month for each, a mere $60 a year. I think that's a good deal. Frankly, Apple's been has had the best deal ever. I bought Logic like years ago, yeah. Final Cut Pro years ago, never gave him another cent for $2.99 or whatever it was. So, I don't mind. I think $5 a month is a fair price. You will have to have an M1 or later iPad to use Final Cut Pro. You will have to have a A12 or later to use Logic. It's not out yet, despite what Steven's showing us. It won't be out till May 23rd. Is that a real copy you've got there, Stephen? Or
no. That last week, a basic Apple guy on Twitter, he's a great follow, but he created a Final Cut iOS icon just for fun, and maybe he's got some inside knowledge. But
he might. Now we should say it will not run on an iPhone. So
right,
I knew immediately, and for good reason. Look at the UI. This is Logic. They're not going to fit on a 6-inch screen, yeah. That's for sure.
But what a perfect way, because now we are the multiple generation of, we have to freeze frame whatever we're watching, no matter what it is, to look for like Easter eggs and other clues. And there is no better troll than to simply put an icon somewhere in the back of the screen so that people say, oh my God, Andy forgot to clear his desktop before.
And Apple did do that, didn't they? There was a file at the last event. Wasn't there a Final Cut Pro on an iPad? I feel like there was.
They showed off DaVinci Resolve on the iPad.
Yeah, they did announce DaVinci Resolve,
Before Resolve was announced. So Apple talked about DaVinci Resolve on the iPad before Resolve was announced on its own. Yeah.
Now, we know WWDC is June 5th. So there is a larger story, which is, well, why did Apple do this now? It would have been a big a WWDC level announcement, I think. We've been talking for a long time this is Jason Snell's refrain. You made this amazing hardware and you don't put professional software on it. What a waste.
I think that's one of the big problems that Apple has, is that there's no real reason to upgrade your iPad very often because most of the apps run perfectly fine. My kids have the first iPad Pro 12.9. And they're still using them just fine. they don't ever feel like they can't do what they're trying to do on it. And I didn't really feel the stretch until I put Resolve on my iPad. Where it's like, oh, maybe I need to get the M2, because I still have with the M1, I felt like it was doing pretty well. And so I think that Apple, I think we want to see more of these professional ads because the iPad is capable of it. It's just that we're not seeing the apps, that take advantage of it. So I think it's a really interesting thing. I think that the membership had to happen. Apple spends so much time talking to developers about using, subscription services that if they had put it out as a single item, it would have undermined their entire thread that they have about how you should run an app.
I do think it's telling, though, because last year they had the iPad OS announcement. Desktop class apps was like a highlighted headline there. And then they talk about Freeform. And so I do feel like Final Cut definitely could have had a huge moment at WWDC this year. But I think it's because they're making room for a big announcement. I mean, the rumors about the VR headset are kind of all over the place. So maybe it's to make room for that and all the big announcements.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. Apple isn't like Google. Google will expand the length of their developer keynote to include anything that they think that they want to put in there.
Which, by the way, we're going to find out tomorrow because it's tomorrow. And we're going to push. We start at 10 a.m. I have a feeling we'll be pushing Windows Weekly and this week in Google.
Yeah, because not to turn this into a Google podcast, but like whereas Apple has just a lot of simple linear things to talk about, and hey, you know what? We don't really have to. This is a developer keynote. We don't really have to talk about. We don't have to really announce Final Cut and new Audio Logic apps for the iPad right here. Whereas especially this year, Google's is shareholders. Please don't tank our stock just because we don't have a chatbot. And also, board, please don't fire me as CEO. I'm doing ever so hard a job right now.
It's going to be the Sundar Pichai apology tour tomorrow. We'll see. Actually, they're going to talk a lot about AI. I know they've got a folding phone, which they finally admit they're going to be making. They'll have things to say, but
it is refreshing to talk. I mean, to bring it to Apple, it is refreshing that I've always thought that Apple has a sort of sometimes an infantilizing attitude towards its users, saying, "Well, we hate leaks because we want the delight and surprise our users." Like, well, okay, look, we're not 8 years old, and this isn't Christmas Eve. It's like whereas Google is like, sure, oh sure, well sure, we'll show you the folding phone. Oh, sure, we'll talk about this tablet because we're working on it for about 6 months. That's perfectly fine.
Very different attitudes, isn't it? I think my read on it was just Apple wants to clear the decks for what will be the most important announcement of WWDC, the VR visor.
Yeah, and there's a big question still around. Now, this may be why suddenly there wasn't a lot of updates to Final Cut. And a lot of people have been talking about, we haven't seen any new features for like a year and a half. And people are starting to go, well, if Apple, and we went through NAB where, Resolve and Premiere saw a lot of updates. And so a lot of Final Cut users were getting a little antsy or are getting antsy. And so I think that this was, I think that this clears the deck. But what we don't know is that the only thing that they're going to update? So a lot, there's a lot of tools that Apple has added a Final Cut in Motion that would make it very useful for the delivery of content for AR and VR headsets. And so the question is the delay that we're seeing related to them putting a bunch of new features in that they can't talk about? And the team has essentially stopped working on everything else for the last year and a half and just working on getting the 3D tools up to speed, getting the VR tools up to speed. Those are all in there already to some degree, but they're not very well formed.
That's a good point. So, you'll be using both Final Cut and Logic to create content for the headset, won't you?
And potentially, and Apple's been adding, of course, Logic has been adding lots of immersive audio tools and so on and so forth into it. But I think that also potentially Final Cut and Motion become some of the primary tools to drop video level work into an immersive environment. And we don't know if that's the truth or not yet, but we will in a couple of weeks, and so it's going to be really interesting to see if they roll out, and that's why it'll all make sense. If it doesn't, they're going to have Final Cut will still do great, but it'll need to really focus on the social media, environment, because I think if they don't update by October, I think that most professionals will start moving to other things, and their market may be fine. For their market to be mostly social media producers, and that may be where Apple's going, and that also is easier when you make it available on the iPad. So there's that could be the solution as well.
Final Cut Pro for the iPad, reading from Apple's press release, introduces an all-new touch interface and intuitive tools unlocking new workflows for video creators. A new jog wheel makes the editing process easier than ever and enables users to interact with content in completely new ways. They can navigate the magnetic timeline movie clips and make fast frame accurate edits with just the tap of a finger, or better yet, the pencil, if you have a late iPad Pro.
I think it's really exciting. It's called Auto Crop, and it shows some screenshots on the actual Final Cut page. But this is a feature that you see in things like CapCut and other apps that you can get for iPad, where it will intelligently crop a full-length 16:9 clip to a vertical clip for things like Reels and TikTok thing on the subject. And what's interesting,
did they buy that from Quibi?
Well, that was but it's funny because most companies will call this an AI feature. Like, right, this is AI-powered cropping. And if you look on Apple's landing page for Final Cut, they're very careful to not mention the words AI or artificial intelligence anywhere. But for the auto crop feature, it says intelligently adjust footage for vertical or other aspect ratios. And so I'm curious, it's farther down the page where you see like the glass blowing candle thing. There's scene removal mask, which is like an auto green screen, which again is a takeoff like TikTok and what they do. Auto crop and voice isolation. Those are kind of three features put together. Curious if they will actually say these are like ML machine learning features, AI features, and if they'll bring these to the Final Cut on desktop, because this auto crop feature, as far as I know, is not in Final Cut for the Mac right now. And I'd love to see it. That would save me a ton of fun.
Yeah, that's really interesting to me too, about whether are they going to decide to make Final Cut into a iPad focused edition of Final Cut, meaning that they're going to have a pro level editing suite for people who are likely to be editing on an iPad? Or are they going to try to give you an equivalent experience as much as humanly and engineering possible between these two platforms? So if you were switched to, so you could start editing a project on Final Cut for desktop, spend some time on the plane continuing the project on iPad, and then continue back on the original when you come back. That's two different ways to do it. And with the M1 chip powering both of your machines, there are a lot of potential there.
Well, it says on the page you can send a project to Mac. So if you start in Final Cut on iPad, you'll be able to send it to Mac. But it does not say you could send it backwards. And I imagine there would be some compatibility issues if you start in Final Cut on a Mac and try to send it to the iPad. I don't think you'll be able to do that.
That's too bad if you can't go for full round trip.
Yeah, I mean, one of the real powerful things there, though, is to be able to do an assembly while you're still shooting. And so
that makes me think that's the point, is right, to bring the iPad to the studio.
Yeah, and so you could be sitting there with an iPad and a director, or someone sitting there, and they could be doing this on a laptop as well, but an iPad's kind of a nice place to do that, where now I don't think the iPad can ingest yet directly, but you could be potentially sending something via NDI or sending something up to Frame.io as camera to cloud and then pulling it back to the iPad in the same location, and then being able to assemble things. And you can do that with Resolve as well. And so those are things that I think that being able to make those decisions, the reason that editing, if you have everything storyboarded and you start shooting everything and you start inserting them a lot of times before you've broken down that set and set let go of the crew that you're spending $25,000 a day on, you can go and shoot a couple inserts. I need a couple hands to do this, or I need something else. And so the closer we get to being able to edit while we're shooting, the oftentimes the more we just think of a couple things that would be nice to have for the editor later. And so those
it's
are
like
things
a
that
fancy video tap with a little more control. Yep. Tell me, just for those of us who are not pros like you, you can't ingest. What does that mean?
It just means that right now there's no way that I know of that you can plug in some kind of card that would let you take the HDMI or SDI feed from the camera and capture it directly to the iPad. And so we don't, I don't think that it should be capable.
So where would you ingest it? You said if you have a NDI connection, you can watch it live, but how would otherwise, what are you going to do? Have to have a computer there and ingest
it? Again, you'd save it to files. You'd either save it to files, you know, the cloud files, or you could do something. I imagine you could tie it into something like frame.io. So frame.io, you can have a camera to cloud, which is you have a Teradek or something connected to your camera and it's uploading while you're shooting. Every time you hit stop, it just uploads that file to frame, and then people can pull it immediately down. And so those are ways to kind of get it in there really quickly. This is the beginning probably, because again, the USB-C is capable of getting video in. We have other USB devices that will capture video. The M1 and M2 are definitely capable of managing that process. What's missing is the subsystems that would allow that to easily flow straight to files, you know, onto there. And so
close. One of the reasons probably they're requiring these higher end iPads is you can hook up a Thunderbolt drive to the iPad and use it as your bin.
It's not clear from the information they've given whether you can edit off an SSD. That's something where LumaFusion on iPad, you can actually have the footage on an external SSD drive connected to an iPad with a Thunderbolt cable and actually edit with the footage sitting on the drive. Nowhere on this Final Cut landing page does it say you can keep footage on an external drive and edit it in Final Cut. So you might have to actually transfer it onto the iPad directly before you can edit it, but it's unclear. They didn't say anything about
that's it. That's a big deal because they do make 2 terabyte iPads now, but still.
And I think if we think about really large projects, we're probably going to go back to desktop. But where I think this really fits in is for social media. So if you're like, I'm going to go to Cinegear in a couple weeks and we're going to shoot a bunch of stuff, I'm definitely going to take an iPad down and I'm just going to try shooting. I've done this with LumaFusion in the past, which is that, you know, if I want to shoot a short, I'm just going to try to shoot it probably with LumaFusion and with Final Cut just to see what it feels like. But I could theoretically just be shooting everything with the iPad, have a nice little rig. You can get these small rig a couple different
use the ones, iPad's camera.
Use the iPad's camera for social media. Absolutely.
Yeah. Or, you know, I mean, like I have one of these little, you know, USB-C dongles with an SD card slot on one side. And so like I would bring my Sony A7IV mirrorless.
Just pop it. Yeah.
Just pop the footage, you know, put it on the iPad and then edit it in Final Cut.
Whether you have to copy or not will make a difference, of course, to you. I guess you wouldn't want to edit on an SD card anyway. You would copy it to the iPad.
Well, and I think that, again, when you're talking about wanting to turn things over really fast, I look at like shorts. You know, one thing I'm interested in is like, do the plugin architecture that works in Motion, will it go over to work in Final Cut? Can I, for instance, save a bunch of effects that I build in Motion that might be my lower thirds, might be my text ups and so on and so forth that are all designed the way I want them and I just have to type them in? That would be an incredible integration, but I don't know whether those will be supported, at least in the first version of iPad.
So lots of questions raised by this Apple announcement, obviously. Go ahead.
Well, one other word on external devices. On the page under the monitoring settings, it talks about capturing ProRes footage on iPad, but you'll also be able to monitor external microphones connected to the iPad. And this is a big deal because I deal with a lot of microphone and podcasting and iOS devices, and it's largely like a black box. Like you usually are not sure if it's using the external microphone. You don't really get audio levels from the external microphone. And so here it looks like they're making an effort to encourage external mics, show you that monitoring live on the iPad screen. And so I feel like maybe a year or two from now, we might be close to that kind of ingest of video footage, whether it's an external mirrorless camera connected via a cable or a webcam. And I do hear from a lot of people that wish they could connect things like external cameras to an iPad for a video podcast or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's one of the few things that defines the difference between I'm going to New York for 2 or 3 days. I can just take my iPad and I'm going to New York for 2 or 3 days, but I have to do one 15-minute pretty okay quality video stream. Therefore, I have to bring the notebook plus everything that I need to accessorize with it. Yeah, that's the one thing that they need to do.
They're showing some TikTokers shoot with the iPad at the skate park, then go to the diner and edit at the diner, and everything they need, and post from the iPad, I presume, right? Just put it right up there.
And I think that we're seeing Apple's been doing this for a couple of years, is they're focusing more and more on social media, content creators. They've been very successful in that area. So a lot of content creators because that's fast. It's, when you're not, when you're not getting paid per hour, you want to be able to throw it together as quickly as possible. And so a lot of creators use Final Cut, right now. And so I think that it seems like they're looking at a market that has really embraced them, as opposed to the film market, which has been just not super excited about Final Cut. And so I think that they may end up leaving, but definitely focusing more energy on the social platforms.
Yeah. Well, that's a huge and growing platform.
It's bigger. It's far bigger than the broadcast. Yeah. The broadcast market's getting smaller. Yeah. Social media is getting bigger. Yeah. It's probably not. And the problem is that in social media, you have a lot of people that every new feature is something that they're pretty excited about, and they have, and when they want it, a lot of people want it. In film and TV, it's a lot of really fiddly things that people want that take an enormous amount of engineering, and the chances of them actually using Apple's product is very low, because they'll complain about something that they want that they have in Avid or Premiere or Resolve, but the chances of them actually changing course for that feature is very low. So the ROI for Apple to chase after the film and TV market is very, very hard case to make. Whereas in social media, there's no real clear winner. There's Apple. I think Final Cut is probably one of the largest installed devices for that kind of thing. But it's a market that is still ripe for a lot of disruption.
I think the pricing also tells you that's where they're headed. Because if it's a pro market, you could charge a heck of a lot more. $4.99 a month, get 1 month free, or you could pay $50 for an entire year. And that's for each product. So if you wanted both, and I guess there are people who would want both, that'd be $100 a year. That's well within any, social media creator's budget. That makes sense, right?
I'm curious if it will be available for iCloud family sharing also.
Ooh.
my kids, because they're inexpensive labor, I've actually have them taking my video podcast content and making vertical clips so I can post to TikTok and Reels.
Oh, why didn't I think of that?
They don't have a, thank you. They don't have a Mac, and I actually don't have a family Mac around set up. They have iPads. And actually, to change 16:9 video to a vertical clip on an iPad, you can't do it in iMovie. It just doesn't have that kind of feature. So that auto crop and Final Cut is going to be the deal. And so I'm going to get them Final Cut. Unfortunately, they have older iPads, so don't tell them. I might have to
get new iPad. You can use it on an Air, though, right? And you'll want on the M1 Air, M2 Air, and you'll want the pencil, I imagine, or no, Alex? Is this the kind of thing you?
I bet you there's a lot of opportunities for innovation with the pencil as it relates to Final Cut. I think they saw even in some of the examples, they showed some places where you could paint on it and so on and so forth. If you look at how it's being used in Keynote, like there are features in the iPad version of Keynote that aren't available on the desktop. So I can grab onto an object, for instance, and just with my pencil on Keynote and just animate it, just swing around. I want it to go over here, then I want it to go over here, then I want it to go over here, and I let go, and that animation's there now.
watching this clip from the film that they put out. They've got a creator using a pencil in Logic, but then drawing a sound. There's all sorts of possibilities, aren't there?
Yeah.
And of course, those guys in the diner were, as was an earlier creator, are annotating and putting text, because that's what creators do. They like to do. They put text on their video with a pencil, well, I
think
too.
If you just think about just circling, doing something where you're just circling something and then doing an arrow over here, even for not just for creators, but for teachers. A lot of things, there could be potentially an enormous number of opportunities here that you wouldn't have in a traditional NLE. So I think it's a really interesting opportunity.
Let me quote the movie My friends are really going to be gassed. If somebody gets nasty with this, they're going to become really good. I don't know what the kids are talking about, but obviously Apple.
They seem very excited.
They seem rather impressed. Get nasty with it and gassed. Okay, fine.
It's exciting that Apple also said third-party content will be available in Final Cut Pro on iPad. So Motion VFX, FX Factory Pro. I use a ton of Motion VFX plugins. And so the fact that you can use those kinds of lower thirds and animations, which is big for those shorts and vertical videos also, it's pretty exciting.
Well, and if you start loading this, the even just the free samples Apple provides on Logic, you're going to need many, many gigabytes of storage. You're probably going to want to dedicate an iPad to these tools.
I just want to see if they add some kind of emoji function where you can just immediately put in your little emoji heads, you know, right into Final Cut and you can build your own.
Oh, you know you're going to be able to do that. Heads. They actually showed in the video, they showed the press and hold to turn into a sticker in Final Cut and then the moving that sticker onto a title card. I don't think Final Cut has that right now, does it?
You could do it in messages. You can
do it in messages, and then it's in your photos, and then you can export it from photos into Final Cut.
So the text there, it's just a matter of adding that little piece to the stack. Yeah. So it probably wasn't that hard.
Yeah. I think this is a very exciting news. I think worthy of announcement at WWDC, which makes me even more excited about what they might announce next month at WWDC.
Yeah. I wonder, it's going to be interesting to see, like as has been mentioned, the use of external lightning devices would be super interesting. But I wonder if this is a good time to do a head-to-head between, is it slower to ingest and to edit stuff off and ingest and edit stuff across lightning as than it is to use unified memory, because that's always been one of the selling points of at least on the desktop. Here's why we can't let you upgrade stuff on your own, because we have this brand new memory model that's 10 times better than anything you would like if you were able to just buy an $80 drive and put it in yourself.
Do you think this also means that Apple will announce iPads? I mean, this would be a prime opportunity to say, hey, here's the iPad made for Final Cut and Logic.
I mean, the M2 is way more powerful than Final Cut is probably going to need.
We don't have an M2 iPad Air yet, so they might just say we put the M2 in the iPad Air and call it a day. Maybe
I think most of what this is they've got a lot of things to announce.
I agree.
And they need to, you know, clear the deck a little bit, as Andy said, and they just need to have they're very, fortunately for all of us, they're fairly disciplined about how long these keynotes go. And so I think that they're trying to get it down probably to 80 or 90 minutes.
I think they want it lower than that. I think the last couple
have been 80, 90 minutes.
Have they not a tight? WWDC.
They haven't been tight. They were tight 60s for a while.
Yeah.
And I just know because I have to. Oftentimes we're doing stuff for office hours, and we get to the top of the next hour, and I'm like, oh, gotta go.
Maxed out with 2 terabytes of storage. The current Pro with an M2 is $2,400. So that's PC price. It's not like, you know, I mean, that's
premium PC price.
Premium PC. That's buying a MacBook Pro.
Yeah, it would be a bummer if you spent all that money for it and you realize that, oh, this one part of my workflow that's super important for me on my Mac is not present in this iPad.
I do think, but if it made you feel any better, you can buy a Mac. Right now, you can buy a Mac Studio. I was in Costco buying something, and I was buying some workout clothes. I walked by the Mac Studio, and it's $1,499 for a Mac Studio.
Amazing. That's what I run it. I have the Mac Studio, just the M1 Max version, but it is incredible. I have the Max version.
That's what I'm on right now. I can't spend that money. But man, my pocket started smoldering just walking by. So it does make you wonder when you see $500 discounts at Costco, you wonder what's going to happen at Dub. Like it feels like they're trying to clear product, you know,
usually when you see sales, I'm getting excited now.
Clear product,
because I was not excited about the VR headset, be honest with you. But if they announce new Macs, new iPads,
Mac Pro,
15-inch MacBook Air, probably.
Yeah, we don't know anything. We think Gurman knows. We just follow in his wake.
And again, I would say that if I was going to release another Mac Studio or a Mac Pro, what I would do is sell as many at Costco as possible in the, you know, in the couple weeks
dump
beforehand.
Them now.
Yeah. Like clear that deck, because it'll be really hard to move them after that.
Yeah.
We got to see the Mac Pro, right? The Mac Pro's got to be coming. I mean,
somewhere out there.
They said it's coming 2 years ago. They said it was coming next year.
And they're already late, so it's not as though releasing it to WWDC will make it unlate. So now the pressure is off, oddly enough.
Well, yeah. Well, but I will say that the last time they announced a new Mac Pro was at Dub.
So yeah, that's where you announce. That's where the pros are. Where the pros are. Ned Funicello, Frankie Valli, it wasn't Frankie Valli. It was the other Frankie.
It was 5 years ago. Now that I think of it, I think it was 2018 when they did the new Mac Pro. The new cheese grater was, I think, 2019.
Jeez. 2018, I think. This has rekindled my hope for Aperture. Can Apple be like Apple?
No, I think this should kill your hope for Aperture. But there is one more Pro product missing from an iPad that could mean that it could be your full-time computing device, and that would be Xcode, right? Yeah, said Xcode that if they put Final Cut on there and Xcode on there, then you don't need a desktop anymore. But I don't see them. I wouldn't want to code on an iPad.
It would be nice to have that alternative, though, and especially for given that the iPad isn't just Apple's tablet, it's also their budget computer. And so the ability to, for people who are getting on board the Apple ecosystem for well under $1,000, as low as $300, to be able to develop and deploy actual App Store apps on the thing, that would be a game changer.
I thought by now they would advance their Swift playgrounds to the point where you could do, I guess you kind of, I mean, you can put it on the App Store, but where that would be a point, you know, whatever you call it, drag and drop programming kind of thing, where some WYSIWYG, and playgrounds is kind of much more slowly than I would have expected moving in that direction. Maybe that's what we're waiting for. Not Xcode, but just playgrounds to become more powerful.
Do we think they're going to move the desktop Final Cut to a subscription model?
Oh, that's a good question.
I think that they're just happy that everyone's still. I don't think that they're going to change it. I think that would be hard, because a lot of us have used that as a reason that we stuck around for a long time. It's like, well, you know, you don't pay a subscription for it, and you know, everything else, you know, and people, so I think that
people were pissed. By the way, I saw a number of people, you know, in the usual snark zones, Twitter and Reddit and Hacker News. That there was, Apple's doing an Adobe.
Well, it's a lot less money. Well, like $5, it's $5 a month, and $50 a month is two very different numbers, you know, for what's going on.
Well, to be fair, $10 as cheap as $10 if you just want one
for Photoshop.
Which is one of the crown jewels.
Minimum. They don't let you take each one of those. So Photoshop, you get $10 a month, but if you want After Effects or Premiere, you got to buy into the entire suite. And that's the thing that's a lot of reason that folks like me won't use Premiere, is because I'm like, I don't need all of those apps, and I don't want to pay for all of those apps. They, you know, I get the business model, but I don't appreciate it.
But on the flip side of that, like, A, if it keeps you completely up to date, like on new revisions as they come out, that's a nice thing. That's one of the benefits of Adobe. I think that they did follow through on their promise to say that, look, it's not as though we're just going to give you an option, an alternative towards never giving us any more money ever again. They do keep enhancing it with really, really nice barn door style updates. But the other cool thing is that it really does lower the bar for a lot of makers, that that people can figure out that they can afford $5 a month, or even I've got this one project that's going to take me 3 months. I'll invest $15 in a 3 month subscription to Final Cut Pro. But they may not be in an economic position where they can say, I need Final Cut Pro, but I just absolutely cannot afford it right now.
Yeah, I think, and again, I wouldn't have as much of a problem with Adobe. I paid $10 a month for Photoshop.
Me too.
Photoshop
Lightroom,
and that's fine.
Bundle is worth $10 a month. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's
that's
the
twice what this to, is.
But it's the you have to pay for everything else if you want, just because all I want is After Effects and potentially Premiere. I don't want all the other apps. I don't need them. You know, like, and quite so
annoying.
I don't.
It's quite.
And
annoying.
So it's, yeah, so sure. It's, it, I just feel like there's
and
a
then
point.
They push storage, expensive storage on you. And,
well, and again, for me, there's a point of subscription makes sense. The developer gets money ongoingly. They can, you know, that allows them to innovate. Yes, I get I that.
Yeah.
It's the, I'm going to bundle you into something that, right, that makes it,
the
that
greed
ensures that I make way more money. Yeah. It's a manipulative behavior that I don't, that I just think Adobe, you know, I'm sure that they're making a lot of money, but it's really, you know, they're creating this huge gap because there's a lot of people upset about it.
It's a difference, you know, between an ongoing income and rent seeking. And Adobe is absolutely rent seeking at this point.
And the thing is that, and that's why a lot of people, like, as you know, the other problem that Adobe has is that there are three times as many engineers working on Resolve as there are on After Effects and Premiere. And so as Resolve keeps on getting better and better and better, people are, you know, like for me, I'm half and half Final Cut and Resolve. So when I do precision work, I use Resolve. When I use Fast and Furious, I use Final Cut. And it's about half of my editing time is spent on one or the other. I don't need them to change. I'm not trying to figure out which one's going to win. I just use the two, and I know what I, when I go into a project, I know which one I'm going to use, and I don't try to figure out how to get back and forth between them or anything else. You know, I just do the thing, right? And so I think that I don't really feel that pressure, but I will say that I know a lot of people that are using Premiere that are, you know, looking at Resolve as a $300 buy once, never even pay for an upgrade. Like, why am I here? You know, and it wasn't that way a couple of years ago, but it's starting to really, you know, edge people out. And it's because they're only using Premiere and being forced to pay for everything. And that's just that's the thing that is really driving people crazy.
I've been feeling, as I said at the beginning, guilty that I paid once 5 or 6 or 7 years ago for Logic and Final Cut.
I don't feel guilty at all.
Well, I want to, yeah, I mean, Apple doesn't need the support, but I don't think it's a problem saying $5 a month or $49. I think that's appropriate. I do think really there's an interesting story here. I think you nailed it, Alex, that Apple is pivoting to creators, or, you know, social media style creators, TikTokers and YouTubers, as opposed to movie studios and TV.
And production. I think it totally makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. That's the right way to go. Yeah. That's absolutely the right way to go. And by the way, that's the most vital, interesting area right now in production, right?
Yeah. Well, with the writer's strike, absolutely.
Yeah, your timing is excellent, Apple.
The timing couldn't be any better. There's a whole lot of, you know, people that are just going to sit there and wait for the next thing while the creators go crazy. Yeah.
Another thing somebody in our Discord pointed out, in none of these videos or stills do you see Stage Manager. Oh, good. Good catch.
I still don't get that.
Isn't that interesting, right? You wouldn't, because it takes up so much space. You want that full screen. You want every inch of it. No, I don't turn it off too. Yeah.
I don't use Stage Manager.
Yeah. Flopola.
Yeah. You know, some things catch up. You know, Apple can put some stuff out and it goes a little slow for a little while. Like Freeform is not something I'm using every day, but I feel like, oh, I could see using this. You know, like it's cool. I just can't find other people to play. They're all like, you know, so that's the only problem.
In my case, it wasn't so much that I tried it and rejected it. It's more like I tried it. I saw that, wow, there's something interesting here, but it is not so intuitive that I can pick it up as I go. I'm going to have to wait. It's like binge watching a show that everybody tells you is awesome. I'm not rejecting Better Call Saul. I'm saying that I have to defer starting to watch it until I feel as though I have enough time in my schedule to start like adapting to this. But just getting back to, I mean, I think that you are right about not pivoting towards creators, but making sure the creators are really, really happy. I mean, that does click in with something that happened. We're going to be talking about the earnings call later on, but one of the most interesting things in the Q&A was Tim Cook was asked directly, say, hey, what about the pro level of the market? How's the pro level market doing? And he said, oh, yes, we're absolutely committed to the pro market. But he did say, like, outright that we do consider, do I have the quote here? We consider ourselves a consumer-oriented company. So it's not as though they're ever going to abandon pros, but when they see where is our bread buttered, it's basically on people walking into a store with their grubby hands full of cash, plunking it down, and then walking out with something they're going to adore.
Yeah.
As opposed to the machine smiths, so to speak. Yeah.
And I will say, as a pro, the Mac Mini and the Studio, but the Mac Mini especially, has fulfilled more needs than I've had. You know, it was always like, oh, this is a great little package if it was just a little bit more powerful, and now it's more powerful. And I think that between myself and Oh90, I think we've now bought 30 of them. Like, it's not a lot, you know, not a minor amount of them. And they're great as glue. And you put them in, you know, you go, oh, my son needed to do some programming at school. Just gave him Mac Mini. You know, just, he's got monitors there. Just plug them in. And it's just, you know, it's so powerful. And so I think that, I don't think that the demand for the pros is high enough. I mean, I think it, when they show like, and this is the percentage, they won't cut it out, but if they split out, this is much how much we made with the Mac Pro, it'll be like,
oh yeah,
tiny little sliver that barely exists, you know? And so that's probably also why there's not a lot of pressure. I do think it's important though, from a mind share perspective, for the people to feel like they're, you know, there's a value to having an F1 team, you know, like, you know, and there's a value in the development of all the things, all the product, all the technologies, as well as just where you position the product. So I think having a Mac Pro does make a difference in the long term. I think exactly when it comes out and the actual income doesn't matter.
It's what what's happened is the definition of cool kids has changed, because it used to be people would look to the pros as, oh, they're the cool kids. They're the ones who are really using technology. We're going to emulate them. Now, I really think the cool kids are the people who own Mac, Apple stuff and are creating with it. And it's not the studios. Those aren't the cool kids anymore. So I think Apple's completely justified. And it's certainly a good economic decision to just say, look, cool kids use Apple.
And the thing is again, most of the pro line is mostly focused on how do you make it more like Avid? Like that's the request they're making, right? This is what we want to be more like the product that we're probably just going to stick with anyway. Whereas the social media market is really creating new things, new ideas, new ways of cutting.
It's vibrant. You know, it's exciting.
And it's really hard. Like when I work with, I think that what people don't realize is how hard it is to cut. You know, the kind of stuff that we see, like it seems like an easy thing when, you know, like Steven put up something this morning about Final Cut and I was like, wow, like that's moving fast. But the thing is that you, that kind of editing is really hard, especially when you're I work with a lot of creators and that kind of work is an enormous amount of very fine tuned edits and graphics and they're paying attention to things that broadcasters aren't paying attention to and how they put all the stuff up together. And it's much faster editing oftentimes. And they need somebody to pay a lot of attention to them. And it, you know, Resolve may do some of that. Premiere probably less, you know, because they have Rush. So they're going to, which no one uses. Like, you know, so Adobe's got a Rush team that no one's using. I've never seen Rush in the wild.
Yeah, I know. Used. That's what, you know, Adobe like wanted everybody to use.
But they've got a product that they think that everyone's going to use. And so I think that for creators, having Apple and Blackmagic sitting there kind of vying for their attention, which is, I think, is really... It's really great for them. And we're going to see a lot of innovation in what video looks like as you move forward. Yeah.
It's also really good for Apple's business because Apple isn't really about, hey, we're going to sell a whole bunch of people a bunch of $10,000 computers and we're going to be really, really happy about those margins. It really is about we are acquiring a customer. And then as soon as we get a customer, we can monetize the hell out of them. The person who bought that creator to buy an iPad instead of the $1,500 Windows laptop that they and gaming laptop they thought they were going to, it's not just that $1,500 iPad. They're probably going to get a watch. They're probably going to get AirPods. They're probably going to subscribe to Apple services. And now they've got revenue for life. And so that's not necessarily something that someone who has the $10,000 to spend on the tricked out Mac Pro, they're just looking for return on investment, bang for the buck, tick off the features that I want. They're not necessarily learning. They're not necessarily setting into motion a sequence of events that leads to them getting an Apple themed tattoo in 7 years.
Yeah. Well, Apple wants to be hip. Apple does not want to be establishment. They are establishment. That's the dirty little secret. But they don't want to be seen that way. They want to be seen as a punk with the leather jacket, the turned up collar going, hey, wait a minute, that's not hip anymore either.
But also, in order to be that relevant, and especially with like the influencer TikTok crowd, they're going to have to move very fast because as I scroll TikTok, as you do, I see the little CapCut logo on so many of the trending videos because CapCut will add these templates and filters that will then go viral on TikTok. And then everybody wants a video that looks like that. And so they go to CapCut to make the video. And in order for Apple to compete and not, you know, for people to choose to go to Final Cut on their iPad versus CapCut on their phone, they're going to have to stay with some of those trends or at least offer some of those filters and effects so that people will want to use
it. You're already out of date. TikTok's dead. TikTok's over.
What is this?
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, no. What are you looking at TikTok for, man? TikTok is history. I don't know what's the new one. I just know that my kid, who was a big TikTok influencer, has moved now to Instagram and YouTube. And there's no cap cut on his videos. Although I do notice this is sponsored by beef. It's what's for dinner. So I think he's doing all right.
I've heard of that brand. That's impressive.
Sponsored by that's beef.
Holy cow.
He, by the way, does this with the MacBook Pro 16 and Premiere. So, and there's no ad for it and nobody's asking him and there's no behind the scenes. Oh, here's how I do it. Nobody cares about
late teens. He's a fogey, for heaven's sakes.
I know. He's 28 now. My God, he's out of it. He's so old. Wait a minute. Here he is. Here he was with somebody even an older fogey, smoking a stogie. It's fogies with stogies. All right, let's take a little break. We do want to talk about the quarterly results. Even though the six colored graphs are not here, they are going to be here in absentia. There's a lot of other stuff, including the New York Times, just noticing that Katie Cotton passed away 60 days ago or something. Apple Insider, your publication, had the story April 10th. The New York Times published the obituary this week.
They probably didn't have that obit ready to roll. I think that
She died very early, surprisingly, at 57.
It has to be a New York Times obituary, so I wouldn't be surprised if it really did take them a few weeks to get all those quotes. Yeah. It was a really good piece.
It was nice. It was really nice. Yeah. Katie Cotton, of course, longtime Apple PR person, and really the person who put Apple on the map when Steve Jobs came back. So yeah, she deserves a lot of credit. Passed away at the age of 57 in April. But the New York Times obit was this week. Let us move on, and we will have more in just a bit. I'm going to pop my collar, turn up my thumbs, and talk to you about ZipRecruiter. If you are starting a business, boy, you know, as somebody who runs a small business, I really appreciate ZipRecruiter. Whether you're starting a new business, you're growing a business, or like me, you're just trying to keep that business all the wheels on, you need the most talented people on your team. I've really learned a company is just, it's made of people. It's just the people in the company. So when you're hiring, you're building, that's the building blocks. That's the foundation of the company. That's where ZipRecruiter comes in. It really works. You can try it for free right now. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. If you're going to start a new business, think what it would be. It doesn't matter if it's a charity or a taco truck. You still have to hire people. For us, when we're under 20 employees, and when somebody leaves, that's a big gap. That's a hole, because suddenly we've got to cover all those responsibilities and at the same time find somebody new. That's why Lisa always goes to ZipRecruiter, and she does it at breakfast. I'm sitting, I'm watching, she's posting it. She chooses ZipRecruiter for a number of reasons. One, you're posting to the largest possible audience. Your post on ZipRecruiter immediately goes out to 100 other job boards. It goes out to social just automatically. So one click of the mouse and you're everywhere. And sometimes I know people say, well, wait a minute. I don't want millions of phone calls and emails from people who I don't want to hire. No. Don't worry. It all goes into the ZipRecruiter interface. They reformat the resumes. They're easy to scan. You can have screening questions. This is very powerful. You know, yes, no, multiple choice, even essay questions that'll let you kind of filter out and rank the remainder and then pick the right person fast. But there's one more thing ZipRecruiter does that is transformational. Lisa will post at breakfast. ZipRecruiter will take that post and go through all their current resumes, more than a million resumes, using their powerful matching technology and find people whose qualifications match. Now, they don't invite them to apply. They send them to you. You can look at them. Same screening process and say, I want to invite these three. These three really look good. And that makes a huge difference, because when somebody's invited to apply for your job, they respond, because that's, you know, that's flattering. That's good. So one of the big problems these days in hiring is people just no shows on the interviews, no shows, you know, not with ZipRecruiter. Those people are going to apply. And I have to say, with those labels that you could put on here, that's another way ZipRecruiter really differentiates itself. You can say, no, you can work remotely, for instance, or training provided, or urgent. We have an urgent need. And those labels, there are many more, will stand out among all the other listings. And that's very powerful. ZipRecruiter really works. She'll post at breakfast, and I love it. within an hour, she's saying, oh, look, here's one. Oh, here's another one. And it's such a huge relief because we're desperate. We got to fill this position. And by noon, she'll have usually three or four really great candidates. That's how we found Viva in our continuity department. Let ZipRecruiter fill all your roles with the right candidates. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. For us, it was just a matter of a few hours. See for yourself. Right now, you could try it for free. Use our special address just for MacBreak Weekly. And I want you to use this so that they know you saw it here. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. MacBreak. ZipRecruiter. It's the smartest way to hire. And it's exactly how we do it. It really works. So in a nutshell, Apple's quarter, surprisingly good, right? Better than expected anyway. Jason yeah. Snell last week said, I predict $90 billion in revenue. It came in higher, about $94 billion in revenue, $94.8 billion. So I guess that's 95. Better than the market expected. The margin, better than the market, 44.3%. That's a nice margin. That's very yeah. That's nice profits. 24.16 billion in net income. That's $8 billion in a month for 3 months. A little bit off the year to year previous, but that's, you know, still good money. And the real surprise, let me pull up the six colors charts, because the real surprise was the success of services that has really outperformed yeah. for Apple.
All time record. They mentioned that was not just because of one particular segment of it. It was across the App Store, Apple Music, iCloud, even payment services.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, usually the caveat I say is, well, it's all through the App Store. And that ain't, by the way,
right.
That ain't going to be forever, because the EU is really, really pushing them on that one.
Yeah. Also, they in the Q&A, they also did call out that App Store game revenue is way, way down.
Right.
Largely, and partly that's because they had an artificial boost during COVID. But they're mentioning that advertising revenue is down, game revenue is down, and that's probably where you see a lot of the bad news happening.
Service is now nearly a quarter of their revenue. Of course, iPhone still, you know, more than half. Actually, even a little more than half than before. 7% iPad, 8% Mac, 9% wearables.
March quarter record for iPhone.
Yeah. Which this is normally a slow quarter, right?
Yeah, the first quarter is it includes holiday sales, and so a lot of that takes a lot of the air out of the second quarter results right. for mobiles, because whoever was waiting to upgrade has probably upgraded by now.
Right.
So yeah, I mean there's a lot of really good news here. There's if you read the transcript, anytime they every single segment either includes the phrase quarter record. Or it says unprecedented foreign exchange headwinds and unprecedented international macroeconomic turndowns. So, you know, like basically the score of like each category there,
yeah.
Like Mac is down like 31%. The third phrase is hard to compare because, of course, this quarter last year we were getting a big bounce from the release of Apple Silicon. So the fact that Mac sales are down 31% is hard to compare because it's not the same.
It's like a 15-year-old. It's all excuses. Excuses.
I mean, it's valid, but that's the point of an earnings call,
right?
Basically, right. Even when you have the bad news, to try to leaven it as best you can without getting sued by shareholders, because you can't say things like that during.
Was the worst news the Mac revenue change? I mean, it's bad news for me because I'm a Mac user. I love Mac, but year over year, Mac revenue was down 31%. I mean, that's a big drop.
It was the most dramatic. iPad was down 13%. That's again also M1 changes.
Yeah.
Wearables was steady, down just 1%. And even then, again, this is where they try to make sure that they get all the good news out. They're saying they had record quarters in the U.S. and Greater China, despite being down 1%. Services, and, again, nothing but nice things to say about services. So,
and of course, the Mac had, after the M1 was released, had just an explosion.
Right.
So it's really hard to keep that pace once you've you know, once you've had such a huge influx. So,
and it's going to be the studio display, all that.
Yeah.
And what happened, yeah, all came out in that in March 2022.
America's down a little bit, China down a touch, EMEA, Europe, and the Middle East up a little bit. Japan kind of flat. Yeah, I mean, this. What else did Tim Cook say? Any other kind of did you glean any? He talked about AI. He said we're cautious.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he did.
And careful.
He was asked about that during the Q&A, and he did the usual double-edged thing of saying that we're cautious. We think that it's still early days, but also kind of like what Sundar Pichai was saying in defense of their late arrival into the chatbot, saying, hey, we've been an AI company for a long time. We've been using AI in fall detection. We've been using AI in the EKG stuff. So that we have AI throughout our experience. We're just being cautious, and we're being safe, and we're being secure, which is completely valid.
Stephen Kovac asked him about layoffs. He said, Tim Cook said, that's a last resort. And so mass layoffs, not something we're talking about at this moment. That's good news in a tech industry that has laid off hundreds of thousands this year.
Yeah, and they're still hiring. That was in a CNBC interview that they gave, yeah, I think, just before the earnings call. Yeah. And so they're saying, we're still hiring, we're slowing down that rate.
Just a lower clip level than we were before. We're doing all the right things. They're challenging the things that we spend. We're finding a few more ways to save on it. This is, of course, a message to investors. We're frugal. We're being careful. Right. Yeah.
Still, and mentioning cutting corners where they can. Again, not as desperate as you know, Google probably saying, we're still using disposable flatware, but we're asking people to not throw them away. Just rinse them. Keep them in your pocket. That's your spoon for the week.
Yeah. Anything else that we gleaned from the earnings call or interviews pre or post?
A lot of Apple's message was all about emerging markets, and because they did have to admit that there was a lot of slowdown in the U.S. markets. But however, they're basically talking about India, not just as for manufacturing, but as a new market. That's kind of one caller actually compared it a little bit to the situation and their opportunities in China about 10 or 15 years ago. And Tim Cook said specifically that, yeah, we think that there's a big opportunity often because, again, hitting upon the question about China, there's a lot of people who are entering the middle class, and those people now have money to spend on luxurious brands. He didn't call himself a luxurious brand, but you know what you're talking about here. What I do see in India is a lot of people entering the middle class, and I'm hopeful we can convince some number of them to buy an iPhone, as well as see how and we'll see how that works out. But it's working out well.
He also did say that the Apple savings account has had a, you know, incredible response, you know, the high yield savings.
Yeah, we know that.
That was another drumbeat. Yeah.
Wow. Right. That was a huge success. Apple made enough money that they're going to do another $90 billion in buybacks. And of course, that helps the stock quite a bit. Right when they do,
yeah, because that drives up revenue, but that's also, it's starting to become a little bit more controversial, because even if you're not, like, you know, quasi-socialist saying, well, why don't you put some of that money back into improving worker situations, but a lot of it is that even Congress is I think the SEC is putting in new rules that are going to affect in the fall about how, look, you can't be we are calling it a stock buyback, but under rules that we abandoned a bunch of years ago, that's basically investing in your own company using insider information. So we are putting into effect a whole bunch of new rules about how you can do buybacks, including basically you have to announce, like, exactly each, the $90 billion in buybacks basically means that the board has approved $90 billion worth over the coming seasons, depending on opportunities that Apple sees. So the government is basically saying now that you have to explain every single transaction when you make it. You have to explain why you're making it, why you're making this quantity of investment, why you're making it now, basically to make sure that they're not playing some tricks saying that, hey, we know that that our stock is going to tank in the next 2 months because we're going to have to announce that this thing where this device where you charge both the phone and the watch on the same thing is never going to work, and we want to make sure that we get value out of the company, or we, you know, do whatever we have to do before then. So it's a little bit of controversy there. But on savings accounts, that was another drumbeat thing where a lot of questions, even when you can always tell what part of the message is that when they try to weave a success into every, as many answers as they can possibly make it. And Apple Savings Accounts was one of them. They were asked specifically by, well, how do you see this as an ongoing driver of revenue? And that the interesting response in that he didn't, Tim Cook specifically was not talking about it as a product, revenue generating product, so much as like he directly compared it to part of the Apple Health portfolio, saying that the Apple Watch will help you be healthy with exercise, heartbeats, keeping an eye on your stats, things like that. We think that our financial products are basically also helping people to build financial health and wealth health. So that was interesting. Again, they're not talking to the press. They are talking to analysts who are going to be directing like hundreds of millions of dollars on investment money, depending on what he says. The fact that he declined to say that we're hoping to make some money off of this is either A, shows that he's very much taking the long view about when they can make this profitable, or he is being very, again, he's Tim Cook. He is coated with Teflon. There is nothing, he's got nothing to worry about in terms of his position or Apple stock. The fact that he is declining to say that we're trying to make money off of this, we are actually just trying to create an Apple Health product and basically get people, and if there's a business aspect to it, to get people more entwined into the Apple ecosystem, meaning to, again, we don't want to just sell somebody a laptop or an iPad or a watch. We want to create a new customer that we can then make money off of for the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years. Interesting.
It was a funny comparison to the fitness thing, but apparently they only want financial fitness in the U.S. No one else gets on Apple Card
and iPhone users.
Well,
actually,
you can't blame them. I'm sure
Android users can die in the street, poor and homeless. That was your fault for not buying an Apple
you
Watch.
You should have bought an Apple Watch.
I mean, it's so hard just to get it to work in the United States, let alone.
Oh, I can imagine the banking regulations you'd have to face and all that stuff. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I just realized I ran and got my, I'm so excited. And now that their Final Cut's coming out on the iPad, I can use my Bridge keyboard with my.
That is an investment you are going to love for the rest of your, because it feels good that you're investing, again, becoming a customer and just part of the ecosystem and part of that tribe. It just, I myself got a Bridge tattoo on the back of my neck here. I'm so happy about it.
You know, this was I bought it early on before Apple obviously came out with its own Magic Keyboard with a real trackpad. And this looked kind of cool to go with because it's heavy. It's aluminum. You know, yeah. I mean, it's a real keyboard, not a kind of click, fake keyboard.
As nice as the Apple Magic Keyboard. I love my Apple Magic Keyboard. Yeah. It feels like you've got a tablet with a mobile thing on. Bridge was great in that they basically said, if you want it to feel like a laptop, damn it, we'll give you a laptop.
Yeah, but I used it for about one day because it weighs as much as the iPad does.
Okay, there was that.
And it's thick. And I got the Magic. The Apple Magic Keyboard, and I was like, no. I've had this Bridge keyboard in my drawer. I just realized, and then of course the story came out this week that Bridge has basically gone completely belly up. Staff unpaid, orders unfulfilled. I seem to remember this was a Kickstarter. I feel like it was crowdsourced originally.
It's unfortunate because it really felt like a brand that would be around for a long time.
I know.
Time.
Yeah.
And it was one thing when the iPad launched with the smart connector at first. I feel like I could be wrong, but in the announcement, it was like, you know, this smart connector is going to, you know, bring a whole new wave of accessories for the iPad and all that. And it didn't really happen that way. You know, even with a lot of those Bridge keyboards, you still just have to do a Bluetooth connection. And it's just not ideal. Like, I don't want to charge another device. The Magic Keyboard is the ideal solution for me. So it's unfortunate.
Yeah. 9to5Mac talked to some former employees who said, yeah, I mean, the company was mismanaged during growth. There were misleading statements from its two co-CEOs, an overall hostile working environment. I don't know anything about that. I think, regardless, impossible to compete against Apple if they're going to sell a similar product. And this is a problem Apple has. You know, the ecosystem for add-ons for, Apple stuff is severely limited because of what Apple, you know, they don't make a dock. So there's a dock business, right?
Unless you're a partner like Logitech and you can make things like the crayon that Apple literally will talk about in the keynotes and push in the Apple store as almost.
Well, they were, I think they were selling the Bridge in the Apple store briefly anyway.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
They do mention this, like, in the 9to5 Mac article is really, really good. They talked to a lot of people, and they dipped into a lot of their own experience and knowledge about it.
Yeah.
And yeah, they mentioned that, for instance, when the Magic Keyboard came out, it could naturally, as an Apple product for an Apple iPad running an iPad OS, it could do things that no third party keyboard could possibly do. And like Steven said, when Apple often will work with a third party manufacturers and kind of lift them up if that company can make something that Apple doesn't think it can do a great job or doesn't make a good fit with. Remember that when Apple, when they had their big iPad education event and they decided, look, we need education, can't necessarily spend $100 for an Apple Pencil. So not only will we will basically have, was it Logitech, create a crayon for the iPad that is almost as good. It's just not quite so important. So yeah, they'll partner with you, but if you're not as tight as Apple and Logitech are, watch out.
Yeah. They do quote some guy named Jason Snell who said that the Bridge trackpad was, quote, not remotely close to Apple's trackpad in class. He described the final product as being an imprecise, jerky experience that was simply no good. So,
yeah.
Thank you, Jason, for killing Bridge. It's your fault.
That's okay. That's okay. I got a cousin who's into laser. He'll give me a discount if I'm on his Instagram. But yeah, and to be fair, this is why it can really, really bite you in the butt, because it's not that they made a defective product. It's that the only way they could get at that point, the only way they could get the trackpad to work, because third party pointing devices were not supported in iPadOS at that point, was to do kind of a hack and basically make it into an accessibility hack so that it would basically turn on accessibility. And you basically use it as an accessibility third-party pointer, which was really not necessarily optimized for that kind of thing. It was great that they got it working at all, but it's not something that when you got someone like Jason Snell, who's no fool, who's just basically going to say, I'm not going to accept any excuses. I'm going to tell you that this was a pain in the butt to use.
Yeah.
That's going to be bad.
I actually got the Bridge touchpad. It was actually a standalone Magic Trackpad device. It was nice, sleek, black, and it was USB-C. The reason I got it was because I didn't want to have Lightning anymore. I was trying to go all USB-C. But even that with just wireless touchpad, it just wasn't as good. Like, it just wasn't good enough to use.
It's too bad. But that's what happens, you know, in the world. So if anybody wants to buy this, I'll give you a good deal. No, you can't have. John, why would you want to buy it, John Ashley? What would you do with it? You don't want to buy it, really.
I'm gonna keep it. It's going to go in my library of
$5.
Failed. Yeah, no, I'm not giving it to you. This is a nice box. It was a great product. I thought it was a very interesting product.
Do you think it will work with a Google Pixel tablet next month?
Maybe. Hey,
I should
ask you, Andy, if you want to join us tomorrow at 10, I forgot that you cover Android stuff, unless you're doing it for Material.
No. Well, I'm going to be paying attention for Material, but
if you would like to join us, we would love to have you. Jeff Jarvis and I are going to do the keynote tomorrow. At 10 a.m. Yeah. Pacific for Google I-O. It's off to work we go. Apple has, well, this is a weird headline from Bloomberg Law, so I'm going to go with it. Apple fails to fully reboot iOS simulator copyright case. You may remember Corellium made a security research tool that emulated iPhones. That was a useful thing for security researchers. On Monday, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit ruled that simulator is protected by fair use. They had to go all the way to the Court of Appeals for it. In CoreSec, which is the name of the simulator, furthers scientific progress by allowing security research into important operating systems. And so, it's okay. And Apple says, okay, fine, we're going to drop it. This suit's been going on since 2019. Mm. And they've lost every step of the way. They pursued it all the way to the 11th Circuit. So this is good news, I think. You know, fair use has a posse anyway in the 11th Circuit.
Yeah.
But I think it's
moot now. Yeah.
It doesn't matter. And so I think that Apple's kind of like, okay, well, there's nothing to do about it now. And for a little company that did this, I don't, Apple tying you up in court is, you know, a pretty expensive process. So I think that might have been also make sure that everybody thinks about
right,
going down that path, because they're going to, you know, because that's hundreds of thousands of dollars that it costs to defend, you know, to go to court. That's that level of case is not $10. And so I think that even if Apple loses sometimes, I mean, I've definitely worked for large companies that they just tell people, yeah, we know we can't win, but it's still going to cost you $500,000. So, you know, like this is the cost, you know, just make sure that it's worth it.
Apple, Corellium did have some support from third parties like Public Knowledge, felt that this was an important case to defend. So I don't know how much of it came out of their pocket, but of course that's a long 4 years in court.
Yeah. And you can see why Apple fought it for so long. The line they can't let anybody cross is, hey, we made something that can run, that can pretend to be an Apple computer and run the software, or at least convincingly do it, even if it's something as important as running security checks and trying to investigate the vulnerabilities. But yeah, they don't want that door open even a crack.
Yeah. We mentioned that the EU continues, and probably this summer will tell Apple, you're going to have a third-party store at Google as well in their Play Store. Also, a little warning from the EU, coming specifically from EU Industry Commissioner Thierry Breton, about Apple's reported plans to implement a made-for-iPhone certification on USB accessories, USB-C accessories. And the fear is, or the thing Thierry is addressing is, that Apple produced chargers might allow faster charging speeds on the iPhone 15.
I actually don't think that. Yeah, I think that what they seem to miss there, unless someone misread it or everybody misread it, is the made for iPhone will probably have to do with data. You know, like, right, you know, whether it passes data or not. So I think they're going to let you charge all you want. But if you're not made for iPad, you won't be able to connect a device that actually can talk to it.
So this is only about charging. Right. And Breton is merely saying, we will stop iPhones from being sold in the EU if you try to skirt our new USB-C charging policy. So, Apple will have a USB-C charger. They don't have to this year. I think they have to by next year, but
by the end of next year,
by the end of next year,
they could theoretically release one more product.
Yeah.
Or two more. They could do the 15 and the 16 and still be in line.
But it's not totally surprising that the EU would basically issue this warning and do it in such a public way, saying you're not going to get around this by saying, hey, great, you can charge for third party chargers. Enjoy your 5-watt, 18 hour to a full charge thing.
Right.
Worth the fight, wasn't it, everybody? Because, you know, that would have been petty and stupid, but you could totally see Apple doing that. Totally. I'm not saying they would do that. I'm saying that I don't know that they wouldn't do that.
The only thing is that the only question would be is, could they charge it faster if both devices are talking to each other? So, you know, and it has to do with overdriving the battery and so on and so forth, that if they have something, because the problem really is that, you know, you buy all these chargers and, you know, the chargers are varying level of, I mean, USB-C is kind of a commoditized product. There's a lot of things that aren't great that are released with it. And so the thing is that you could argue that Apple would want to have the devices be able to talk to each other so that they can manage the power that's going to the phone. And so that would be the reason that you'd want to have your own closed system to make that actually work.
Yeah.
Apple can do a lot of other things, like put a different, you know, put your USB-C in and then have something on the back that charges really fast. so that there's a lot of ways to work around it. Well, it'll be interesting to see what Apple does.
I don't think I've plugged my iPhone 14 Pro more than once to Lightning. I charge with MagSafe in the car at overnight. And so even with this USB-C port, even when I travel, I bring the MagSafe Duo still because
super funny. You're 100% right. What's really interesting is that I poo-pooed the inductance charger for a long time, and then I got that one for my car, and now I'm addicted. Like, I just put these little things everywhere. I set my phone on it, and I can't remember the last time I plugged my phone into anything. You know, I think that I wouldn't be surprised if the base models of the iPhone come without any connector in the next couple of years. The pros will probably stay there because you have to move a lot of data, but I wouldn't be surprised if Apple just closes it off completely.
See, my problem, I wireless charge for everything I do, but I like having a wallet case, and the charger doesn't go through this. And so I have to plug it in, and I would be disturbed if I couldn't have my nice thick wallet case. You have that Peak case, Alex, and the Peak charger is fantastic.
My wallet on the back.
I'm not going to put my ID and my credit card in something that's only attached to my phone magnetically. I'm sorry. That
works great.
But I did it in Europe. Because I wanted to have, for some reason, I can't remember. There was a reason. Oh, because I was going to use my phone as a camera. I didn't want to have this.
That's exactly why I moved to it.
And the problem really is not so much the bottom part of the wallet case, but this silly wrist strap, which for some reason every time got in my picture. So I've got enough problems with my thumb getting in my picture. I don't want another thing that can get my picture. So yeah, I use the Pete case, which I love. But that has special charging. That is a special hard magnetic thing, right? I mean, it's not, and you still have to take the wallet off to do it.
Yeah, and I do, but it's still a lot easier.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, but for you, I mean, for I'm really a big proponent of choice. I really think I have wireless chargers in the house. I don't prefer them. When it comes down to the my battery's down. It's the end of the day. My battery's down to 12 or 13%. I like plugging in a cable. It's just more convenient. It's going to be there. I've got this charging cable that can be used for 18 different things inside my house. It just, as opposed to having this plugged into a wireless charger that can only be used with like maybe 3 or 4 things. But it would be churlish if Apple didn't like support USB power delivery, which is an independent standard, supports 5-amp charging. And that, again, that would be kind of churlish. I'm with you when it comes to the ability to create a custom protocol that can do a much, much more intelligent and much more safe version of charging, again, high speed, but also without overheating, without damaging the battery. That's a big, big priority. But for them, for I think power delivery has to be table stakes for any USB-C charge phone.
I think that what's interesting is that Apple could, there's a fine line there, which is that Apple could deliver something that will charge just as fast, but the battery will last longer if you use the made for iPhone version, because it's going to condition that power. And so, and I think that's going to be a really hard one, because if you plug it in and test it, it'll be fine. But over a year or 2 years, if the device is able to talk to it, it's going to vary that. It'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Yeah. But power delivery wasn't designed by chimps. I mean, they took that in consideration. And when you're talking about the difference between, hey, this phone will last me 7 years versus this phone battery will last me 4.5 years.
I will say, I did a video on MagSafe battery packs, and I compared a bunch of different ones. And when it comes to just the heat generated from a lot of these third-party MagSafe batteries, like, I just don't trust it. It gets too hot. And so when it comes to charging my phone, I know it was really poo-pooed by a lot of people, but Apple's first-party MagSafe battery pack, it's the one I go to, because it's the only one that feels like they've found that balance of actually charging it and temperature, and I don't feel like my battery health is going to take a 10% hit after using this pack for a few times. So,
and again, I think it's really going to be about the made from iPhone is going to be really about data. It's not going to be about power.
Yeah.
Like that's the
data focus. Data and devices. I mean, if you don't think you probably are not going to be able to, if the day in which you can attach an external camera to an iPad, it's going to have to be a made for iOS or made for iPad device certified.
I do want to mention, I put the link in the show notes, but the ESR MagSafe wallet, I know you don't want to, Leo, have like cards on this magnet thing, but the ESR wallet built in Find My, so it has Find My on this MagSafe wallet, and not like the Apple MagSafe wallet Find My, where if it just disconnects, it marks the location. This has like legit Find My, not precision locations, but, you know, Find My like Chipotle devices and stuff. And you can have the cards, it has a little loop where you can like hold it with your finger, and the whole case actually is a stand for your iPhone. So the ESR wallet, I recommend.
So the Peak magnetic wallet is, I mean, it didn't fall off while I was in Europe. It made me nervous. So I imagine this is true too. You can have a really strong magnet on these MagSafe backs.
I have it because I have the Peak, that attaches to your vent.
I have the whole thing. Yeah.
When it snaps on, it snaps.
They were a sponsor. Like
it's not.
And I bought everything. I have two different bicycle mounts. I have everything. And even, you know what I really like? There was a little sticky magnet that you put on your bedside table, and the phone goes right onto that. And that's really, that's really nice. But, I want to be able to carry safely, my driver's license and my credit cards are protected in this wallet. And plus, I love the idea that the wallet protects the front of the screen. So if I drop it, as long as it's closed, I'm not.
I know I have a screen protector on it. And I guess like
Apple Care. Apple, you guys don't do Apple Care?
Yeah, but
well, I mean,
I still don't want to break my phone.
Scratch. My wife is so happy with that because I gave her my 13 and it was like in mint condition. Because it literally, when I get
my phones are
it goes into a case.
Yeah.
Okay. The screen protector goes on. It's like in the little.
Mine's in mint condition. I don't know screen protector or anything. You just got Apple Care. No problem.
I get Apple
Will they replace
too.
It if it just scratched a little couple of scratches? Like, I don't have any scratches. Like,
I do have a scratch. I do have a couple of scratches that bother me. I can't look too closely.
See?
You're like one of those trust fund kids. You just, wrap the new Lambo around a pole. Don't worry, Daddy will buy me a new one.
I've stupid cars. Daddy Care Plus.
Those of us with good, rough working person hands, we have to take care of the damn things that we own.
Both my kids' phones are bashed and battered and cracked. And when I say, let's get a new one, they say, no, they don't want to look fancy. They want to look like working people. And so they have beat up old phones.
I'm putting on Notions. Very nice.
I had two Tesla 12s that I had to use for work. And we finally, I gave them to my kids and they didn't have any problem with it. It didn't bother them at all.
No, wait till they're teenagers. It's this peer pressure doesn't happen teenagers. Until they're. Oh, they're teenagers? Really?
Yeah, they're teenagers. They're my 14 and 15 now.
Just oh my to kind God, of put it in perspective. I can't believe this.
Yeah, they're
14, I thought they were 15. Babies still.
I'm living in and the past. Yes. Okay, maybe a little older then, but they're maybe not. But it felt like there was severe peer pressure because I gave them Daddy Care Plus. I told him, you got Daddy Care Plus.
I don't know if it's a new generation or the last generation, or the next generation. My kids feel no peer pressure.
They want shiny new products.
I was like, do you want to get on Snap? Because she's not on any social media. Yeah. She's like, no, if someone wants to talk to me, they have to come over and get my phone number. Like they have to ask me.
Oh, wow.
She's just like,
no. Oh, so they're not, they're abnormal. That's why. Yeah. Okay. You have abnormal children. 14.
My son's 14 also, but there is peer pressure about the green bubbles because he's been in a couple.
Oh, yeah. They do talk about that.
Somebody's making this thing green.
Your kid doesn't have.
I will admit that is one where my parents go. My kids go. Oh yeah, you don't want a green bubble. they're like no one. Everyone, you get dropped out of the.
Oh yeah, you're not in the groups. You're not in the group. You miss all the parties. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that is intense. I will say they don't have any peer pressure except for the green bubble. Is nobody wants a green because they just feel like your parents don't care enough to get you enough.
Yeah, you know what? With the coronation and everything, we here in the U.S., we've been awfully smug about, oh, at least we didn't grow up with a class system. Yeah, well, we do. We just, we.
It's the blues and the greens.
It's a crypto class system.
We pray to a different golden god. And it's a glowing white Apple logo. Well,
what's fascinating now is that I guess the numbers are like 80% under 18 or something that are using iPhones.
It's
like
really it's high.
So I was telling you right at the beginning, be the cool kid. Even if you're not, act like it. And hello, fellow kids.
Make sure you conform because it's the conformists who turn into rock stars and movie stars.
Exactly
people who just do exactly what the guidance counselor tells them to do. You know,
here's
get
the
into that
one.
Good school. Knuckle down hard. It'll pay off in the end.
Final EU story. Well, it's not the EU story. Well, it is in the EU story. So the UK regulator who's feeling his oats right now after shutting down the Microsoft Activision deal, the competitions
donuts
and markets
for the whole
authority.
Office.
Yeah, donuts for the whole office. Look at our power. Here we are, not even in the EU. So they were trying to open an investigation into Apple's mobile browser and cloud gaming services. And the EU said, no, not going to do it. The Competition Appeal Tribunal. Maybe it's different in another language, but the word tribunal in English, it doesn't have a good sound. Anyway, they quashed the decision to open the investigation and refused Britain's antitrust regulator permission to appeal that ruling.
You are right. If you're going to call it a tribunal, you need to be flanked by two Klingons carrying pain sticks.
Yes. The Competition and Market Authority. Don't make me laugh. I can't. The Competition and Market Authority can still appeal to the Court of Appeal. They haven't decided yet if they're going to do that. Why? I don't. Celebrate your Activision victory and leave it at that.
Well, again, they got the Activision victory, but they did get Charles. So
yeah, right. There you go.
three steps forward, two steps back. It's
did you get up early and watch the coronation, Andy? Feels like you're a royalist. You might have.
No, I just think it's funny as hell when you have like, I think these things are funny as hell where you have like this, these 2000 people in this room. Some of them are like, they got their OBE or whatever, like 18 years ago. And they're like, yes, it's good to be part of the system and, you know, to be recognized like this. And then like, you see like a pop star come in who's just a great person who's like, hey, is this my seat? Is that your seat? and all the infantile stuff about I wish I had enough time in my day to figure out what the deal is with Charles's kids and why they're beefing with each other. I don't care enough. So I'm just going to say, I'm just going to listen to all these commentators like, oh, you notice that he's he's not just two aisles behind. He's also to the left, not to the right. He's seated to the left. Perhaps that's why the Princess of Wales is wearing that hat with that feather so that the cameras would not even have him in the front. I'm like, I don't care. Just bring on Lionel Richie. Okay. Yeah.
Let's take a little break.
To mention,
go ahead.
Real quick, just the CGP Grey video. I put the link. It's the difference between the UK, Great Britain, and England. And it's an old video, but it's hilarious. And he even explains like the crown and all the territories and how it's all like terminology.
Crazy. Yeah.
Great video. Yeah.
He's British, right? Or no?
He lives in London, but he's American.
He's American, but he lives in London. Yeah. I am not Britain.
I'm just going to say that he chose the scheduling for this. Why he chose to schedule it like days before the Eurovision Song Contest, where there's going to be all kinds of unflattering comparisons about the pageantry and the entertainment value and how invested people are in this. He's not going to come off well because people are going to be way more interested in Eurovision than in his coronation. Bearing the lead.
iOS 16.5 release candidate. RC does not stand for Royal Coronation, stands for release candidate. iPad OS 16.5 release candidate. Mac OS 13.4, Watch OS 9.5, and TV OS 16.5. All the RCs came out today. They all came out to play. What does that mean?
I haven't seen anybody who said there's any kind of breakthrough features. It was kind of interesting in that Apple doesn't talk about unannounced products, but they did like accidentally or just, you know, who cares sort of mention that when they press release about the Pride Bands said that, the Pride Bands and the Pride Watch Face are going to be released this day next week. It will require Watch OS 16.5 and iOS 16.5 so that means that you're releasing 16.5 on the next date. Ha ha, we have a scoop.
I think the only notable change is the sports ball tab in the news app, a dedicated sports tab.
Yeah. Apple does these Pride Bands every year, and usually when they do the Pride Bands, they release a wallpaper to go with it. And I don't think there's anything else that would require an update in the operating system. It's probably the wallpaper, right? That's going to come with it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but it's cool they do that every year. I mean, I think that they not only is it cool in and of themselves, but they set a trend that now if you have any kind of like of a wearable, you can get the Pride Band for your Fitbit. I don't know if the Pixel Watch is making enough money to generate a custom Pride Band, but that's a really, really cool thing, and I'm glad they do it every year.
Yeah, well, and it's $49 every year. It's kind of a nice little
ka-ching.
So the band does match the wallpaper. It's not my favorite band.
I agree.
They've done some nice Pride bands, but not this one, I think.
It can double as a birthday band, it looks confetti. Like a birthday cake.
Yeah.
It's not like the rainbow stripes, so they usually have some kind of version.
Yeah,
of
which I really liked. Yeah. Maybe they've just run out of ideas.
Exactly. How many times can you? Yeah, it's kind of an ask.
Apple's former head of iCloud is now working for General Motors. Remember that GM decided they were not going to support CarPlay or Android Auto in their future vehicles. So this guy who, you know, Mike Abbott, who worked at Apple for iCloud services and infrastructure, did iMessage and FaceTime, He will be executive vice president of software, so presumably responsible for whatever General Motors puts in their cars instead of CarPlay. We have a Chevy Bolt that has CarPlay. I'm not buying a car without CarPlay. Sorry. In fact, Ford even said we lost that battle 10 years ago, which is true because the car's software is never as good as Apple and Google can do, I think.
I think especially where GM's coming from, they're not coming from trying to create a better service. They're coming from trying to make more money.
Own it.
So they're coming from bleeding us a little bit more. And that position where they're coming from when they develop this is how do we squeeze a little bit more money out of the consumer is never going to build a better product. And they don't have enough juice. The problem is they have a commoditized product that isn't, no one cares about, like no one cares about it, like in the sense that I have to have a GM. If you're buying a Tesla, you're buying a Tesla, you might get over that, but if you're buying a GM, you could just as well buy a Ford. The problem is that other people will just be like, well, they could buy a Honda, a Ford, a Volvo, whatever. It doesn't, like, they're not in a place where they'd have to come up with something that is truly different for people to be willing to put up with, not having something that everybody uses in their product. And so I think it'll be really interesting to see how this turns out for them. I'm looking forward to it. I would popcorn.
It's too bad. I mean, I think actually the Chevy Bolt is a great EV. I was very happy with it. I was interested in their new platform, the Ultium platform, but they discontinued the Bolt so they could do Ultium and they're not going to put CarPlay in the next generation. So yeah,
I'm glad we bailed them out. It's worked out so well.
So dumb. It's just off the table. I mean, it's the reason I didn't buy a Tesla either, to be honest. There is nothing better than Apple CarPlay. And because you're getting a new phone every few years, you're getting new operating systems updates all the time. It's just always going to be more up to date than anything a car manufacturer can do. Jim Farley is right. They lost that battle. It's done.
I actually just recently got CarPlay, but by a third party, like little screen that you put in. It's called the CarParade. I have an older car, so there was no chance I was going to get like built-in CarPlay. But now that I've used it for the first time, like since it's launched, I'm not going to use anything else.
And you control it. Yeah, Apple info.
And I will say that, like, when all things are even, if a car manufacturer actually puts in the entire CarPlay display that Apple was showing, is like, this is what's there.
Oh, I'll buy that.
There's a lot of people that are going to go, oh, I'm just going to buy that. And because, again, for most cars, they all fit into a little box of, there's a sedan, they have a truck, they have a van, but I don't look at it like, oh, I have to have the Chevy van. I mean, I look at it like, well, there's like four vans and I'll play around with it and I'll look at what the features are. And so I think that there's, I think there's not that many cars that stand out that are within a reasonable price range, And so I think that most of them are just like some basic things that you like a little bit better than others. And so I think that that's going to be really hard for GM. I think they're going to actually take a pretty big hit, from that, because there's going to be a lot of people who buy car, who have more, oftentimes have more disposable income. They're not going to buy those cars because there's going to be like, oh, I can just go get a.
But we hired the former head of iCloud. What do you guys want?
and they're also apparently having Google like help them on that OS.
It'll be Google Auto or something running underneath, probably.
It's going to be something new. But part of the deal is that, hey, we'll help you out. But what kind of map are you going to be using in that? You think it's going to be Google Maps?
It'll be Google Maps. I think they already said that.
So Google services will be wired. It won't be Android Auto, but it will be. So there's a. Yeah, it would be nice if you had the choice. Those of us who are aware enough to say, look, if I don't want to have Google, it's bad enough the GM is going to be monetizing all of my telemetry off of this car. Do I have to have another huge company doing it as well? Or at least Apple's a $2 trillion company, but I kind of trust them to only want to be the only company that makes money off of me and exploits me, as opposed to helping other people to do that.
And I have to admit, I used to immediately put Google Maps onto my phone, and that's just all I used on the iPhone. I have gotten to the point where I actually like Apple Maps. I hate better than Google Maps. It took a long time. Like I hesitate to say that, but because you get used to it because you hit the link and it pops open automatically, and you get kind of used to it. When I go back to Google Maps, I kind of feel like I'm going backwards now. Like, I just feel like the display and some of the wonkiness that it has when I'm trying to find something is the Apple Maps is actually after years, because I mean, I didn't start using Apple Maps as a primary map thing until maybe 6 months ago, like this last month.
It's a function of where you are, though, Alex. Don't use it in Rome. Because
really?
Yeah. Lisa and I so had a little battle because I used Apple Maps because I'm using my watch. As we're not driving, we're walking. And I wanted my watch to subtly say turn left here. Yeah. And we kept getting lost and going the wrong way. And Lisa finally just fed up, started using Google Maps. And so every day we go walk around Rome for like hours. Lisa's going, no, turn left here. I said, no, but the watch said turn right. No, turn left. We were battling between maps. And now maybe it was also my fault. Apple Maps did do a cool thing where I could hold up the phone, show it some buildings, and then it would put a giant arrow on the building saying, go that way. But how often are you going to do that?
Google definitely does that. Well, Google does it too. I use it a hell of a lot when I'm in New York.
Yeah.
Because the number of times where it's like, I've been there long enough that I want to be one of those persons who knows if I'm on 10th Street, if I'm on 10th Avenue,
where is 8th
Avenue and 11th Avenue? I just went two blocks in the wrong direction, turned around.
New York's a good example because that's exactly where I Rome and New York, the two places where I'll go the wrong way for a few blocks. Yeah. Never let me get over
it. And it is, I mean, Apple's doing an amazing, Apple has been doing an amazing job. It really is the equal of Google Maps for a lot of things. It comes to, it's the finer points that I think that Google still has the advantage. Like, okay, this is definitely the building, but where is the entrance to this building? Apple Maps.
Apple's starting in iOS 15 did this. And I used it a couple of times in Rome, but the whole idea was I don't want to be a tourist holding up my phone saying, where the hell am I? I want my watch to subtly tell me which way I was going.
I actually did a side-by-side test video in the car. So I had Google Maps and Apple Maps on two iPhones side-by-side. And there were some parts, Apple Maps, the voice navigation, I actually preferred because it would say things like, after the second light, turn right.
I agree.
And it had specific voice things. But I got a lot of comments on the video from international viewers that said, it's just not usable.
It really depends where you are. I think that's really the bottom line. And Alex, you're probably using it mostly in Silicon Valley, where of course it's
California.
Very good. You're California,
where it's very good. LA
if the city is not more than is younger than 200 years old, you're not playing this on expert level. You have to go to Boston at minimum to figure out that okay, thank you for turn left at the next corner. It's not a corner. There's a pointy bit, and then there's three ways to go that way. And by the way, two of them are no left turn, so I can't go there.
Rome reminded me a lot of Boston. It's of course a few thousand years older, and it's crazy. Well, but one of the things about Rome is in the old city center, you can't dig because there's a ruin under there. And as soon as you start to dig something for that new building, you're going to be stopped and the archaeologists are going to come in. So there's no high rises and the streets are pretty much the same layout that they were, 2000 years ago. So when it was just horses or something. So it's crazy. And there's a lot of cobblestones. Yeah. So Apple Maps, I think even Google Maps, I think, same thing in Venice. They struggle a little bit with the weirdness. It's hard to map that stuff.
It really is. You need the biggest advantage is when you have a city. I'll change my answer a little bit, that you need a city that's had a huge, horrific fire more recently than 110 years ago, where they say, okay, guess this is horrible. This it's going to take us years to recover from this, but at least we can finally do something sensible with the way we live.
San Francisco, perfect example. It's a grid. It's easy.
Go to Boston. You can see they spent an entire century during the 19th century literally filling in the bay to create new real estate. And you can tell because if you go to the top of the Hancock Tower, like the observatory at night, you say, wow, that's the only part of the city where all the street lights are like in straight lines and angles. And all the streets, they're like Arlington, Boylston, Clarendon are like named in alphabetical order. It's like, this is what we could have had we just basically laid waste to the entire city in 1908 or something.
I prefer it the Boston way. I like walking around Rome and getting lost. And there's, as you say, there's streets that go at all different angles, and it's great.
Cuts down on the street racing too, because
that's right.
You get that quad bike up to like 30 miles an hour before you really have to bang a hard right there. You're not going to have some fun with that.
I admit I have no experience of most cities driving because I you know, in Rome.
I walk. Yeah.
I walk before 9 a.m.
Yep.
And then after that,
you're smart. Go early. Like, yeah.
Oh, my. Rome's such a night city. You go out right at daybreak. Mm-hmm. And especially during the summer where you have a lot of, and it's like 2 or 3 hours of just walking around. There's nobody there. And it's awesome.
That's the time to do it because it's really crowded afternoon.
It's really, oh man. After about 10 a.m., I will not. I go back because I'm usually there for work. So I'm usually working by then. So I don't care.
I fell in love with it, Alex. I would go back in a heartbeat. I would move there in a heartbeat. I'm trying to talk to Father Robert and see if I can be a priest or just dress like him.
You go to restaurants. Yeah. Go to restaurants and you try to order something, and the waiter will be like, "No, that's not what you're going to order. You're going to have this. This is much better.
Much better.
You can't mix this with
Mix
this with that."
But listen to him. He knows. Yeah, cappuccino afternoon. Are you crazy? What are you, nuts?
Exactly.
Let's see. Apple partner Foxconn buying more land in India and Vietnam. Of course, right? This continues.
I mean, everybody's talking. A lot of analysts now are asking companies how they're de-risking China. You know, mm-hmm. like this has become, you know, they're, everybody's trying to move out. And it still feels like an unforced error by both Russia and China, what they're doing, what Russia has done and what China is threatening to do, just feels like, you know, most of the West is just like, we would just do business with anybody that doesn't cause too much trouble. like they're not really that they're not much of a high horse if you have to do this and this and this. And now they just can't be there, you know? And so I think that India is obviously a big opportunity for Apple.
It's also room. Listen to this. Foxconn bought a 13 million square foot parcel of land, the equivalent of 50 Manhattan city blocks near the Luru Airport, $37 million. Nice.
It's a great place to have a space.
Perfect, you know?
So I think that,
right?
Yeah, and the problem for China is this is a permanent thing. Like, this isn't something that happens. Like, when people start buying that kind of land and building these factories, they're not coming back, you know? And so it's not something that can just zigzag. Now, there's obviously huge challenges around supply chains, qualified personnel do it. I mean, you know, Shenzhen has an incredible workforce as well as a centralization of technology.
But that's been built up over years. I imagine it wasn't so sophisticated when Apple first started, and it's taken some time.
And so, I mean, but I think everybody, a lot of companies, not just Apple, are trying to find their way to at least be able to produce a chunk of the products without that. And that's why the services are so important for Apple as well, because that's your lifeline if you can't sell hardware.
Well, let's take a little break, and I have some picks of the week coming up from Stephen Robles. It's great to have you from Apple Insider. And I neglected to mention beard.fm, which is his YouTube podcast site. He does a lot of stuff.
If you want to see everything I do, it's on beard.fm.
You are the bearded teacher. I think that's good. Good branding, good marketing. Video tutorials. There's a couple of podcasts there. He's a busy, busy guy. And of course, writes for Apple Insider as well. You've got a smart home podcast. That's pretty cool. And then,
yes, HomeKit Insider.
Yeah. And then movies on the side. You do that with Nate Baranowski. That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah. He's a good friend of mine. He's a 3D chalk artist in Chicago.
You're kidding. I love that stuff.
Get a 3D chalk out. I'll put his Instagram during the break.
Would you? I would love to see that. Oh, cool.
It's incredible.
And apparently he likes movies.
He does.
Have you seen Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 yet?
Not yet. I need to do it.
We got tickets for tonight.
Oh, there you go.
Actually, I don't. I'm not going. The kid's going. Lisa and her kid and her ex. It's going to be, I'll let them go. It'll be fun for them. You know what? I haven't been to a movie theater since COVID, and I have no plans to. We have a nice TV. We've got surround sound. I make some excellent Amish country popcorn, thanks to Alex Lindsay. Just tried, by the way, what do they call it? Fairy popcorn, the littlest kernel of all.
Yeah, those are good, too.
Those are really good. Soft. I get your mushroom size, because those are the big ones. I got a sampler with all the kinds they make.
Yep.
So I got better popcorn.
I get the 6 pound. I have the 6 pound of the mushroom because it's kind of your go to.
Yeah.
Then I get the sampler and I slowly work through all of those ones as well for a little bit.
It's
of
fun. It's fun, and the sampler size is just right for the Whirly Pop. So, was it Amish? What's it called? Amish Country Popcorn.
I think so.
Yeah, I buy the 6 pound bags as well because I don't know where 6 pounds of popcorn goes, but it goes. It really does.
160 grams per
Whirly Pop.
Per Whirly Pop.
Yes.
Otherwise, it pushes up against the top.
Yeah. You don't want the top to pop open inopportunely. You want it to be ready when it's ready. And that's that.
I mean, at 165, with it just immediately is like, oops, no, it's pushing up there.
I might, what is it? Ladyfinger. That's the little one. I might buy 6 pounds of the Ladyfinger. In fact, I'm going to do that
now. They're good. They're really good.
It's good to have both. You never know, right? Oh, look, I can do subscribe and save.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Never run out. Our show today, now you know why I've been visiting ZocDoc. Our show today brought to you by ZocDoc. When someone is really good at what they do, you know it, right? And it's like you feel like you're in good hands. It could be a waiter, a chef, a doctor. When you see, you know, a chef run a restaurant run beautifully and the chef is like in charge and stuff, you know you're going to have a good meal. When you get the right doctor, same thing. You relax immediately. You're at ease. You go, I'm being heard. The doctor's listening. She's gonna help me. Now, I have to tell you, everybody's different in what they want. Some people want a doctor. I prefer doctors who are going to tell me everything, all the details, right? Some people don't want to know that. They just say, tell me what to do. I don't want to know the details. Just give me the pills, tell me when to take them, and I'll do it. ZocDoc helps you find the doctor that's right for you. ZocDoc. It's free. It's an app. You can put on your iPhone or your Android device. It's the only free app that lets you find and book doctors and who are patient reviewed. Plus, you can sort by insurance. So you'll know they take your insurance. You can say, I want to make sure that I can make an appointment with them. And so, you know, they're available when you need them. And by the way, not just physicians, not just MDs, but chiropractors, dentists, all kinds, right? So they can treat almost any condition under the sun. Dermatologists. I was looking for a gerontologist, somebody who handles the diseases of old age for an older person we care for. And ZocDoc found the one in the area that took the insurance that was available. I mean, it's wonderful. No more doctor roulette. And no more looking, you know, on the internet for questionable reviews. ZocDoc vets every review. You're seeing the reviews, and the reviews are thorough and tell you things like this doctor will listen to you and give you all the information, or this doctor will tell you just exactly what to do. You know, the quality care you need is just a few taps away in the ZocDoc app. So easy to use. And there's no, you don't have to sign up for an account or anything. You just get it. With ZocDoc, you've got a trusted guide to connect you to your favorite doctor, the one you haven't met yet, but you know's got to be out there. Book an appointment with a few taps in the ZocDoc's app. Start feeling better fast with ZocDoc. You know, you may not need it today. Get it, download it, put it on your phone. Go to ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. That's the easiest way because they'll have a link there to whatever platform you are and so forth. ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. Download the app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. Many available within 24 hours. ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. Dentists, too, you bet. It really, everybody should have it on their phone. It's just quick, it's easy, it's fast when you need it. You got it. ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. Go out, get it, and make sure you use that address. I know you could go right to the store on your phone. Please, would you do me a favor? Go to the website first. ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. Okay, pick of the week time. Our special guest, Stephen Robles. What do you got for us?
So this is a new AI tool. It's called Gling, G-L-I-N-G.
Gling.
Gling.ai. So if you make video content, you know, I do a lot of talking head videos, obviously YouTube creator content. This AI tool, you upload your raw video file And basically it transcribes the video. And the powerful feature is Gling will remove all silences and your bad takes. So if you
how do it know?
it's incredible. Like, you know, typically if you're doing talking head content, you might have some false starts or you say the same thing multiple times. Yeah. And usually it's the last take that you're wanting to actually use in the finished product. And so this, after you actually transcribe, it transcribes a video, it will show everything that it cut out, what it sees as silences and bad takes. You can just very quickly say, actually, no, I want to keep that take, or cut more out. You can even just cut individual words or whole sentences in the video. And so it does all of that. It does an incredible job. And then you can export an XML file for Final Cut or DaVinci Resolve.
So you get an edit list. Oh, nice.
And that's, you know, the reason why I didn't typically use a lot of these AI video editing tools is because I don't want to upload a video and then download a compressed video and then use that to edit with.
Right.
And what I love about this tool is you just download the XML file. And when you import that into Final Cut, which is what I use to edit, it just has all the cuts and it's referencing my original video file, the raw video, automatically. You can even download a multicam XML file, because the way I film videos, I record on my Sony mirrorless camera, but I record the audio separately into a separate WAV audio file. And I typically put it together in a multicam clip. And you can do that with this Gling AI tool. I download the multicam XML file. I can still add an angle, put in my voiceover file, you know, snap that or, you know, sync it to the monitoring angle. And all my cuts are still in sync. You do have to be careful if you're doing that kind of multicam thing where, you know, your video file has to be longer than the audio. Otherwise, it'll like bump in the multicam clip, the video file off, and then all the cuts will be off. So you just have to make sure, like, hit record on the camera first and then record the audio, stop the camera kind of thing. But I've been using it for the past several days and it has saved me hours and hours of time.
Have you compared it to Descript.ai, which it seems similar?
Yes.
Yeah.
But Descript can remove filler words, but then it doesn't, you know, you can download a compressed version, you know, you can do 1080p and whatever, but it doesn't, I want something where I still edit in
Final Cut. It doesn't give you the EDL. I like that. Yeah.
Because this,
by the way, if this recommendation from Steven has disappeared from the show, you can thank our editors who do not want you to know about this product. They don't want me to know about this Gling. G-L-I-N-G.
Because my first step in the process whenever I edit is to just get the raw edit. You know, I cut out all the silences, all the bad takes.
Right.
And so this tool has now done that first step for me. And that's usually a lot of the time-consuming part. Then I can add whatever overlays or whatever. And right now, you can do it for free with a video. And it's not even... there's no subscription and you can't even pay for it yet, which makes me a little nervous. I actually contacted them and was like, let me pay you. Please let me pay you for this because I want this to keep being developed. But right now they just suggest $5 a video, but it's like a tip jar. Like there's actually no official. Yeah, it's pretty wild. It's very early.
But even if they continue to charge $5, that's a good price.
I'll pay it.
That's a great. Goodness. And in a way, that's better than the other pricing models because I don't know how much I'm going to do in a month or what it's worth. But if I'm doing it per video, I know $5. Yeah, that's worth it. Yeah.
So does
it now? Will it help me with the chapter markers in YouTube? Because that's a constant issue.
Not really. No. I mean, you can see the timestamps in the Gling of the video, but not really. Not really.
I want something like that. Yeah. This is good. Yeah, I'm going to show this to our editors and they can throw stuff at me. Gling.ai. Andy, did you want to say something about it?
No, no, I'm looking at the page and it's giving examples of like edits that are it's flagging. The only thing I don't understand is what is a disfluency?
What do you mean? What?
So they got marking silence and adjusting camera.
It's a mouth fumble. You meant to say Final Cut Pro, but you said Final Pro Cut, and you know you could do it again. And then
I think you said here Gling is pretty good and shows promise, but I wouldn't recommend it. I think you meant to say it's awesome. I'm giving them $800 per video.
I'm really tempted to take a look at this. This looks great. You might want to use it with Descript, like do the Descript first and then upload to Gling, or I don't know. This is interesting. I like that it takes out disfluencies. I got plenty of those.
It's pretty great.
Nice. Pretty great. Thank you, Stephen.
Then I switched to all brand, and I have that very much less.
Andy Anako, pick of the week.
Apple has finally a whole bunch of new games in Apple Arcade right now. My favorite right now is What the Car, by the same studio, as you might imagine, that did What the Golf. And you think, oh, car, so it is a driving game. Yes, it is a driving game in the same way that What the Golf is a golfing game. It is at first it is a cartoony, oh, look, fun. It's like you're driving in this little mountain pass with bears like cheering you on and holding up signs. And then, like, instead of a car, the car has like legs for wheels, which changes like how it handles the second time you run it. And then how about way too many legs, and now it's got way too many legs, and it's harder and it's different the way it goes. And then like the next level, it's not even really levels, it's more like you're playing different versions of a weird, very, very weird and increasingly drunk and demented driving game. By the fourth version that it took me through was it's like there are two, I think, either beavers or bears standing on each side of the car wearing like traffic cones as hats. They're just carrying your car through the course. It's like I keep screwing up because like oftentimes I'm just laughing at like what it has chosen to make me do with this car. It is the absolute opposite of, thank goodness, of what I see in most racing games, which is like you do one lap in your really wonderful F1 car, and then it's hey, congratulations, that was a great lap. Now, here you want to upgrade the brakes? Maybe you want to do the transmission and the differential? Yeah. Like, no, just let me drive another lap. Let me have fun driving this fake car through this fake area and forget the burden of mortal existence and an unforgiving and uninterested God for just 10 minutes, please. And this absolutely does that.
I loved What the Golf, so I will be playing this.
That was so creative and very early.
Big hit for Apple. Yeah, and I actually still pay for Apple Arcade because I'm doing an Apple one, even though I rarely use it. So good. I'll be downloading that when we're done. I am downloading a new game from the folks at Niantic. You know, they created Pokemon Go, and today released a game called Peridot, or is it Peridot? It is a virtual AR pet, iOS and Android. In fact, let me... My pet is named Pookie. Let me just launch Pookie here, and I will just show you. There's Pookie. Hey, Pookie, and I can scratch her, and she's purring. You probably can't tell it, but she's purring. And we can play a game. I will play fetch with Pookie here. Let me just throw that ball, Pookie. She's running off. She's getting the ball. She's gonna come right back and come back. Hi, Pookie. Good girl. She's happy. She likes to play. There we go. You feed the pet. Where did she go?
Lost her.
She is. Oh, you can't lose her. I could put that away. I will eventually get other toys. I have to feed her. She's a Tamagotchi. Actually, they showed it already on iOS today. So if you want to see more gameplay with Rosemary, where is she? Oh, she's over there. Oh, the tennis ball's about to break. Where'd she go? It's well done. It's a game. It's an AR game, kind of like Pokemon Go. It's pretty well done, kind of fun. She'll bug me. She's going to sleep right now. But one interesting thing, and I bet you they talked about this already on iOS today. What's that? What does she want that? What is that? You can buy stuff, of course, right? That's where the money is because the game's free. I'll use the location stuff. You can buy stuff and you can get real stuff delivered by Amazon. This is the first deal Amazon has made with a virtual game to order real stuff like T-shirts and things. So it's a new business for Amazon. It's kind of interesting. It's called Peridot. It's free to play, although I'm guessing they're going to kind of be pushing you to buy stuff in there. I think Niantic does really, really good stuff. It's the first Amazon Anywhere game as well. So you'll be able to get Peridot icon T-shirts and pillows and pop sockets to let the world know you're in the Peridot Keeper Society for real money with real shipping because it's real merchandise. Interesting, Amazon. Mr. Alex Lindsay, your pick of the week.
I thought I'd recommended this one before, but I went through the MacBook picks and couldn't find it. And so I felt like it was worth talking about. I use this, I use a lot of plugins from Isotope, this is kind of a secret weapon that I was talking. The reason I thought about talking about today is I was talking to one of my producers yesterday, and I was like, well, I was having some trouble getting the license to work. I had changed computers and everything else, and it took me a couple minutes, and it's like, I can't really operate without it. So when you go into Logic, these are all plugins that are Isotopes. You know, they have RX and Ozone, and you have, you know, Deverb. So if someone's got too much reverberation in their room, you can take that out. DS, Deplosive, D, you know, you're mostly taking things away to make those work. And they have a lot of different bundles. I pay $20 a month. Like it is a subscription that I pay for. I don't know I think it would cost a lot of money if it wasn't that way, but it's a $20 a month subscription. And I have to admit, I was trying to figure out which one I had. I don't know which one I have in there. So that's why I just said Isotope, just check it out. But there's ones for vocal and for music and for a variety of other ones. And you get this big bundle of tools. And again, the ones that I use mostly are, you know, someone talks a little bit into their mic and you take it out. And someone talks a little bit and it really does a good job. And everybody I know that does much audio work has it. It's just kind of you're just like, well, then I just use RX.
What does this dialogue match do? That's interesting.
It is designed, I haven't used it that much because I don't worry about it that much. But if you have two dialogues from the same person, or I think it's also if you have two different people.
Oh, like maybe if you're overdubbing like in the same and room, you want to change the word. But
you want the tonal quality to be the same.
Right.
I have, you know, they have one called Nectar, which is supposed to kind of like analyze and put in the plugins. And I haven't been as excited about that. But the Deverb, Deplosive, DS is almost guaranteed if I start doing much work, I'm going to put some of those in if there's any of those issues that are there for Michael Krasny's show or other things that I work on with audio.
You're doing a lot of audio these days. Yeah. Izotope, Isotope, like an isotope with a Z. Oh, you use it too, Stephen?
I'd say, yeah, I use the RX-10 suite from Isotope, and I use it for exactly one tool all the time, which is the breath remover. I breathe kind of loud. And so I just run my wave file to remove all the breaths, and it's amazing. And then I'll take that audio and bring it into Final Cut. But nice. All the tools are amazing, but breath remover, yeah. Awesome.
It's really good. And,
exactly.
I don't know what you're talking about.
God, you're giving me flashbacks. Years ago, I used to do a podcast with someone who had like a headset mic, and they would keep the microphone like positioned right underneath a nostril. And I'm like, I'm not kidding. I had to quit this podcast after like a month because he would not stop doing it. And it was
have to run this episode through Isotope after this. So.
The force is strong in this one. All right. Isotope.
Continue our dive, exploring the panoply of life at the Great Barrier Reef continues to astound us.
Jacques Cousteau visiting the studio.
Continue to flourish.
I thought it was Steve Zissou at first, but no, it's Jacques.
Our life comes from the water.
Thank you, Andy Anaka. When are you going to be on GBH next, my friend?
I am on this Thursday at 12:30 in the afternoon Eastern time. Go to WGBHnews.org to stream it live or later. I'm also going to be on, if you're in Chicago, I'm going to be on WGN next Tuesday at 7:30 to about 8, also talking about hopefully different tech news, but there'll be lots to talk about.
Nice. Stephen Robles, the bearded teacher, is at beard.fm. All his stuff is there, his bio, his blog, his podcasts, his YouTube series for learners. He does a lot of stuff, but if you just go to beard.fm, you'll find it all there. Stephen, we love it when you're on. Thank you for coming by. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor.
Yeah. Oh, it's an honor and a privilege and a pleasure to have you on. Alex Lindsay, officehours.global. Every day of the week, there's something interesting happening there, and it's free, and everybody can visit and watch it on YouTube or even join the Zoom. What did you do to this week?
Well, yesterday we had Michael Krasny on talking about how to interview.
Oh, like I got to watch that.
Wow. What an hour. Like it was really amazing. I mean, we have a lot of good second hours, and usually every week we have a lot of good ones here, but He was in the zone, and we had folks asking great questions, and we just really dug into the process of interviews. If you're thinking about that at all, I mean, he just really talked about how he approaches it and what he thinks about and how he puts it together. And it just, it was a masterclass yesterday.
Nice.
So we're really, very nice. Really excited about that. Yeah. So I would definitely check it out.
And of course, lots more. You can join the Zoom and ask questions or just watch after the fact. Find out more at officehours.global. And if you want to hire Alex, you can go to his day job, 090.media. He's back home. It's nice to see you in your home studio once again.
Back home. Yeah, absolutely.
A reminder to our Club Twit members, we've got a big AMA coming up this week on Thursday with Alex Wilhelm. You've seen Alex on many of our shows. He's kind of a finance expert, but he's also a great friend and a wonderful guy and lives in my childhood home. You can ask him about that as well. Alex Wilhelm's AMA from my childhood home will be at 9 a.m. Pacific this Thursday. Home Theater Geeks is also every Thursday in the afternoon at 1 p.m. Pacific. Sean Powers will be the guest in a fireside chat next month. Stacey Higginbotham's new book from Annalee Newitz, The Terraformers. That'll be the book of the month for our Stacey's book club. And then on July 14th, it's time to get drunk with everybody from Twit. Twit After Hours. We've never done this, but we're going to sit around, drink brown liquor, and you're going to find out the true story.
I wouldn't say we're all trying to get drunk.
Oh, come on. You know, with Aunt Pruitt hosting it, there will be a significant amount of consumption. Rod Pyle does a fireside chat, too. All of that is part of your membership, not the entirety of your membership at all. In fact, when we created Club Twit, we thought the whole thing would be about ad-free versions. You get ad-free versions of all of our shows, no ads, no tracking, just, you know, privacy, and it takes about an hour out of every show. So it's not that much, but it's, you know, it's faster, and you don't even hear this. You also get access to the Club Twit Discord, which is full of great stuff, not just those events, but wonderful chatting about all kinds of subjects, not just the shows, but even geek topics like, well, you know, alcoholic content. There's also gaming and cooking and food and all sorts of stuff, plus the Twit Plus feed with shows, quite a few now that we don't put out in public. We only put out for Club Twit members. Hands-on Macintosh with Micah Sargent. Hands-on Windows with Paul Thurrott. The Untitled Linux Show with Jonathan Bennett and company. The Giz Fizz with Dick DiBartolo. Stacy's Book Club and all that. And we use it to launch shows. The latest, of course, that's where This Week in Space started. The latest show is Scott Wilkinson's back with Home Theater Geeks. Club only for now. But we're hoping we can launch it into public. The reason we can do this is because you support us with $7 a month. It keeps the lights on, keeps the staff employed, and it keeps us producing new content. So I think $7 a month, very fair. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit. There's also family plans, yearly plans, and corporate plans. twit.tv/clubtwit. We do this show every, let me think, Tuesday, right? Yeah, I think so. Tuesday, 2 p.m. No, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. That would be 1800 UTC. I mention it live because you can watch us or listen to us live at live.twit.tv. There's audio and video streams there. If you're watching or listening live, you can, of course, chat in our Discord if you're a Club Twit member, or in our IRC for everyone at irc.twit.tv. After the fact, ad-supported versions of the show are at the website, twit.tv/mbw. There's a YouTube channel. You'll see a link at the website there for that. There's also, of course, your favorite podcast player. Just subscribe in whatever app you use, and you should be able to listen the minute it's available or watch. We have video versions, too, on a Tuesday afternoon. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Thank you, Steven. It's great to see you. Andy Anatko. Thank you, Alex Lindsay. Thanks to all of you for joining us. But now I have some bad news. It's time to get back to work because break time is over. Bye-bye.
Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here. In case you hadn't heard, Home Theater Geeks is back. Each week, I bring you the latest audio-video news, tips and tricks to get the most out of your AV system, product reviews, and more. You can enjoy Home Theater Geeks only if you're a member of Club Twit, which costs $7 a month, Or you can subscribe to Home Theater Geeks by itself for only $2.99 a month. I hope you'll join me for a weekly dose of Home Theater Geekitude.